Hello, everybody. This is Alan here. This week's episode is a special episode. It is an interview which was carried out at Aya Teffel 2022 in Belfast, and it also appeared on Aya Teffel TV. This is David Hanin and myself talking about storytelling. We talk about the storytelling event which we had at Aya Teffel, which was the social event on the Wednesday night, which was incredibly successful. We had close to, must have been 45 to 50 people attending and telling stories in five languages. So here is the Aya Teffel 2022 conversation with David Hanin and myself. Enjoy.
Thank you, Sean. I'm really excited and really curious to know more about storytelling. So I have got here with me Hanin. Jadala, yeah. Lovely. And then David Heathfield, correct? And then we have got Alan Hall as well, who are our storytellers for today. So tell us, first of all, how did you, honey?
Well, okay, I'll go first. Okay, I met David throughout my journey with the Hands Up Project, and I met him and I get to know him deeply with a little bit of kind of excitement during the course of CREST, which was amazing. He was doing a storytelling course for teachers from all around the world, and we get to know each other more and more. And I've met Alan this morning in the Aya Teffel exhibition hall, and that was amazing that we just met now as well. So that's how I met David and Alan.
Lovely. Okay. And Hanin, tell us a few things about your ELT background.
Well, I am a teacher from Gaza, and I have been teaching for 8 years. I went through different stages of beliefs and teaching practices, pedagogies. And since I was involved in the Hands Up Project and getting to know fantastic people like Nick Pelper and David Heathfield, this completely changed my life, because I had a strong belief that storytelling and drama has kind of irresistible power to create and empower learners to be themselves. Because when we're teaching, we don't want to push the language in the kids. We want to push and pull and have a space for them to be themselves and to celebrate their identities and to celebrate themselves. And that what was David believing and Nick and so many people, so many great volunteers in the Hands Up Project. So yeah, it's amazing to know these people and how they become the highlight of your life with their pedagogies and practices and so on. Yeah.
Absolutely. Lovely. Thank you. And Alan, what about you? Tell us a few things about yourself.
Well, I'm the local, so Cadmi Le Falcha at Belfast to everybody, especially for Aya Teffel. So I've been teaching for about 15 years now. My master's research is in emotional intelligence and language learning, but I'd always had a thing as a youngster for storytelling. I'm from the Glens of Antrim, which is lit, you can see it out the window, where we have fairies, we have giants, we have folklore spanning 5,000 or 6,000 years. So it's about time I tell it to an international audience. A couple of years ago, after using David's books for actually teacher training, we did a course together, and there's been a community ever since with the Hands Up Project, the teachers in Palestine and all around the world. And it's just, it's exactly what you said, where it's empowering our learners. It gets more out of them. It breaks down barriers. It breaks down borders. I mean, this city in itself is quite famous for having issues with borders and barriers, and it breaks them down here as well. So yeah, hopefully there'll be a lot of great stories and great crack had tonight. Yeah,
lovely. And then we move on to David. David, tell us a few things about yourself.
Yeah, well, I'm a storyteller. I've been a storyteller for many years. Before that, I've been an English language teacher, so I'm still an English language teacher, teacher trainer. But storytelling has become more and more the thing that I do and the thing that I'm kind of, I've built up, I suppose, expertise in. And it's been because of the pandemic, I started running courses. Instead of going to countries and running courses for a specific group of teachers, I was put in a position where I thought, well, what do I do with this situation? So I started, I had the idea that I'd start running courses online, and they're completely my own, they're freelance, and it's working. People want to do them. And like Hanin and Alan have said so eloquently, it's become a community, but not a closed community, a community which it touches everyone that those storytellers and those storytelling teachers are in contact with. And both Alan and Janine were also storytellers before they ever met me. But the course, I think what it does, it validates what we're already doing and then gives us confidence and makes us realize we're not the only ones with these creative ideas. Because often creative people in schools, we often feel like we're mavericks and we're not really doing what we're being, you know, what the institution is asking us to do. We're often the rebels slightly. But having that community that's very sociable and very mutually supportive gives us courage to try and encourage people in our worlds to implement storytelling, which is, you know, the essential heart of education. It's the oldest form of education. So, and then this event, the IATEFL, has become incredibly important to me. I mean, I've been involved in IATEFL every year since 2005, when my first book was published. And since 2006, I've hosted a story sharing evening every year. And like Sean said in the introduction, the last 2 years it was online. And it's been brilliant. It just keeps transforming and developing. And exciting tonight that there's going to be Hanine and Alan, a number of other teachers I already know who are going to be telling stories. And then there are going to be people coming along who don't even know yet they're going to be telling stories, but they'll just... So they'll go, I know what will happen. It always happens. I say, oh, actually, yes, I do have a story I want to tell. And we'll have to squeeze everybody in if we can. Depends. You know, I'm sure it's going to be a wonderful crack, as Alan would say. And what a wonderful thing to be in a land which is deeply storied. I mean, all countries are, but Ireland, the stories are very close to the surface and or sometimes under the surface. Of the fairies and there's just so much tradition, and yeah, there's a strong connection. I love Irish stories.
Oh, lovely. Well, we're going to come back to the Irish stories, but first of all, I would like to ask you, how does storytelling facilitate language learning?
Thank you. Well, I mean, teachers have different and various points of views and perspectives towards teaching, but storytelling is a kind of more engaging in making the language memorable. I mean, imagine yourself standing in front of the whole class, people who are not communicating using English outside their classroom, so this is the only way they can do it. And then you're just kind of showing cards, isolated words, and asking them to memorize structures. And so that's absolutely not how language is taught and spoken in the real world. So how do we connect those people to authentic environment by telling them stories and by getting them engaged? Because, I mean, in a way, stories are putting them into a sense of community and creating a sort of relationship between the original version of the story and what it meant to them to hear the story. It creates also a connection between their own beliefs and experiences and backgrounds, because usually when we hear a story, it's not only about language learning, vocabulary, grammar, and so on. It's also about how spoken English is putting into written context. And this is what I love about stories. I mean, words like, I mean, I am a teacher, and this is my first time in the UK. And sometimes when I walk around here in the conference, I hear words that I've never, and expressions, of course, that I've never, ever been able to hear if I wasn't involved in storytelling stuff and courses. You know what I mean? Like expressions like, oh, and I don't know, other expressions that are not taught in the textbox. Also, storytelling is very powerful because it has got a magic when you declare that, I learned this from David and Crest, what you say to the class, story, story, and everybody is a kind of moving from being so fed up with the language class to so excited and saying, okay, tell us a story, and how they say it together in a very moving way. And then they were very kind of attentive to what you are going to say, and they wanted to learn English. And also, the good thing about it, the crucial thing, is that they can infer the meaning of the language and process it into their heads from the context of the story itself. Yeah.
I wish I could say it as eloquently as Hanine. That was just so beautifully put. It's absolutely the case. It's so contextualized. And that story, story, tell us a story, it's about not students listening. It's about them co-creating the story with us. And it's such a community experience when we share stories in the learning environment. And there's so much autonomous learning that can go on as well. The students outside the class prepare stories. I mean, initially I tend to teach them a story at the beginning when haven't done it before, and get them confident about telling a story. And then once they're confident about telling a story, they can then bring stories into the classroom. And often it's students going away and finding out a story from their own heritage, maybe from a grandparent, maybe a story they've heard before, but they didn't pay that much attention. But now they go to their grandmother and they say, tell us that story again that you told me when I was younger. And they learn it. They really learn it. So they're not just, they're being bequeathed the story and then having an opportunity to pass it on, whether in their mother tongue or in English as the language they're learning. It's just so, it's so multifaceted, actually. The deeper you go into it, it's deeply human.
And how have the stories that we tell our students changed over the years?
That's an interesting question.
That's a really good question. It depends on the teller and it depends on the ears that are listening to it. I've listened to more international, but I've told the number of local folk stories I've told from my area have increased because I want to tell that. Like even where we are here at IATEFL, I don't think many people realize we are about 100 meters away from the legendary Salmon of Knowledge, which is right out the door there. A lot of people refer to it as the big fish, but that is the Salmon of Knowledge that Finn McCool burnt his finger on, and then he obtained the world's knowledge from accidentally licking his finger while barbecuing the fish, and it's right there. So, I mean, there's a lot of folklore that it's the folklore that you're attached to as well. You know, I'm obviously from here, so I'm attached to the land. I'm from the countryside. I'm attached to, you know, I'm sitting here with a schlitter, which is a hurling ball. It's a 5,000-year-old sport. So our gods, our goddesses, our kings and queens have all played hurling, you know, down the millennia. So there's a connection to our culture, identity. And then when it comes to, you know, English language teaching, it's connected into the student's heart. It's, you know, I'm not trying to give you the first conditional. I'm trying to get to your soul, really. And the best way of doing it is through either story or hearing their stories, which is, you know, equally as powerful.
It's interesting, isn't it? Because Alan's talking about the ancient stories and you're saying, well, how have they changed? And what's those stories don't change so much as the way that we can use them. We are using them online. We're using, and the way students respond to them, because very often I'll tell a story and say, well, what does that make you think of? And yesterday in my session, I showed a video of Sui Yen Wong from Singapore, who was part of a project I did last year around the world in 88 tales, telling a story from her Chinese heritage, which is deep. All Chinese people know it. It's the story of contradiction. It means the word for contradiction in Chinese, Mandarin, is the translation into English is spear, shield, and it means contradiction, because how can the sharpest spear in the world pierce the strongest shield in the world? You know, the same weapon seller is selling the spear and selling the shield, but the sharpest spear cannot pierce the strongest shield. So that means contradiction, spear, shield. There's a contradiction. And it makes, and some people, Raja Abu Jassa from the Hands Up Project, and she said, well, it makes me think of me as a parent. And how my children say to me, but Mum, you said this earlier, and now you're saying this, and you keep changing your mind. You're contradicting yourself. And of course, we all relate to that. But equally, another woman in the audience said, well, it makes me think about nuclear weapons. We've got these weapons that are meant to be deterrents to protect the world. But this story is making me think, well, really, now we're under threat. You know, nuclear weapons, suddenly we're feeling scared. And they're, you know, is it really safe to have these nuclear weapons when we could be wiped out any second? So you're interpreting the same story in different ways according to what's happening right now in your own life or what's happening right now in the world. So it's not the story that changes, it's the way we interact with that story. And the ways of doing it online and in the modern context and now on Zoom across the world, it's quite exciting. And what the Hands Up Project is doing is children meeting up across cultures, across countries and continents, and learning stories together from each other. And it's really amazing. I mean, the Hands Up Project conference is on Saturday, isn't it? We're all going. I think.
Mm-hmm. I'll present there as well.
Lovely. And can you tell us more about the Hands Up Project, please?
Okay, so this is the story I was planning to talk about. I mean, I was constantly asking the students about the feedback on the Hands Up Project, the people who were involved in. And one of the students said to Nick in an online session, "I wish that the Hands Up Project was a human being. Then I wouldn't want it to disappear from my life." That's literally what she said. And greetings to Dana from here, from the UK. So, I mean, that just made us cry, all of us in the room, because, I mean, those kids are placing in a kind of challenging context. They can't leave for several reasons. And, I mean, they're all under the level of poverty, and there are so many challenging things they are facing. But still, they have... I mean, the motivation to learn. So many scholars just search, how do we motivate our students to learn the new language? And so many theories were put in there. I would say the best way to motivate students is to engage them into the Hands Up Project with so many amazing volunteers. I met Nick Balbrun early in 2018, and I was a kind of, I thought that the whole project is about doing drama, and I quite not like to be in the front and perform a play myself. So I thought it's all about teachers, but then it's just the highlight of my life. My life hadn't been the same afterwards, because it's a whole network. It's a whole space. It's just giving the kids wings to fly when they can't fly themselves. It gives them the wings to fly by their hearts and souls and give them a voice. So it's a sort of empowering the kids and giving them a voice if they are voiceless, giving them the strength if they feel so powerless. So the first playwriting competition was launched in 2017, before I got involved. And I was inspired by the first group performance. They won the first place, Amal Mukherjee students. And they came over here to the UK, and they performed it in the first ever Hands Up Project conference. And the first book was Toothbrush and Other Place. Don't have it here. But the second year, we have this book, Welcome to Earth and Other Place, and my students have a play. So it's all about creating a space for the kids to write about what they believe is good and worth trying to write about. So it's a kind of reflecting on their own personal situations, or about traditional things, traditional tales they have heard from somebody, or even about the things that are going around them. So this is the second book for the winners. And we have got another book. They will be available on the Hands Up Project conference on Saturday. I'll give you one as a present afterwards. So this is Popcorn and Other Plays. And also, after doing all this amazing work among teachers and volunteers, we have Doing Remote Theatre. So this is a kind of a whole pedagogy, because some people think that, okay, the Hands Up Project is extracurricular thing. You just do it as a way of entertaining kids. No, it's in the core of learning, because it's got everything in there. It's got a meaningful context, authentic space for the kids to practice the language, and empowers them to have technological skills in today's world, which is essential. I mean, I believe in creating long-term learners, not to teach the kids for today or for kind of assessment. And this is what the Hands Up Project is all about. It's about empowering the screen to get the kids to tell their stories to the world. And recently, we have been doing in the Hands Up Project lots of intercultural sessions, for example, show and tell, or even performing, that's quite a very recent trend, performing plays to people, to another country, among people in other countries. I mean, I was involved in the last competition with other teachers. I was involved with a teacher from Argentina, and we did a play together. So there are so many challenging, of course, items, such as the timing. I mean, we're 6 hours ahead of Argentina. But in spite of this, and the kids have to go on Zoom online after their school hours, and so many kind of things that people, okay, I don't want to do it, but no. It's just you feel how intimate those kids coming from different and various backgrounds go to each other, and it just feels like they're sitting in the same room like us and started to talking about this. I mean, tomorrow we have a workshop about this, intercultural pedagogical framework for teaching English by linking students from different kind of cultures and countries to perform a play together.
Yeah, can I just say, Hanin's session tomorrow is going to be incredible because our close friend, Maria Teresa Contenanza in yeah. Argentina is going to be there with her students. Your students in Gaza are going to be there as well, all live, and they're going to perform during Hanin's workshop tomorrow. I'm just so excited about that. And it is absolutely incredible. And I want to just say I've been a judge in all of the play competitions. It's absolutely fantastic. And this book, Doing Remote Theatre, I'm really delighted because I took a Japanese folktale, Ikkyu and the Swedes, and I transformed it into a play. So my play is in that book too. So I'm excited
this
about
book,
that.
Yeah. Oh, so we have famous names in there. Oh. Like David and Nick and Jane Willis and so many people.
I mean, Adrian Underhill.
That could be a resource to be told in the classroom.
Wonderful. Yeah. Now, before we say goodbye, can I ask you three to tell us a short story?
All right.
I've already done.
Or rather, you two then.
All right. Well, since the salmon analogy is right here, it is the mythical salmon that does tour Ireland, and it does live in our lakes and it swims our rivers, but no one was ever able to catch it for the best part of 6,000 years. So that's how long the Irish have been here. But one day there was a complete stranger standing by the riverside up in the Foyle in Derry. Finn McCool came across him and he magically caught the salmon somehow. We don't know how. Finn never seen what happened. So he caught the salmon. He put it on a stick and stuck it on the barbecue. But he was obviously missing something to drink with the salmon. And as you know, in Ireland, we have the water of life, which he may have needed to go down with it. I can hear laughing about that. Usca Breha is the Irish word. So he asked Finn to mind the fish. Don't touch it. Don't eat it. You know what that is. But I caught it. I want the knowledge. Finn says, fine, I'm a man of honor, so I will sit here, I will turn over your salmon, and I will watch the fire. So he did. He turned it over, but a bit of the wood got stuck in the barbecue, and he put his hand down and tried to push the salmon itself. But when he put his hand down, he got a blister from the salmon. A bit of the oil had dripped out into the blister, and he put the blister into his mouth to fix it. But instead of the man eating the salmon, which would have given him the salmon of knowledge, that blister then contained all salmon of knowledge. So the second Finn McCool put his thumb in his mouth, he then obtained all salmon of knowledge. And that's how he became the sort of the leader of the Fianna, the Tuatha Dé Danann, and sort of the leader of Ireland for generations.
Wow.
And it's all right over there, the big salmon of knowledge right on Belfast
that
Pier.
That was a very succinct telling. But the great stories of Finn McCool, I just love this. They're just so beautiful and so rich. You know, the Irish mythology is incredible. And in a way, I mean, even though I'm very much English, these stories that come from the ancient traditions in Ireland and in Wales and in Scotland as well are the original stories of the British Isles. So even though we don't tell them anymore so much in England, we think they're Irish and we shouldn't tell them. We've got a very deep connection to them as well.
David, can I ask you a question? So I was here at the studio yesterday and I saw you walking with a massive inflatable earth. And I asked Sean yesterday, who is that? And what's happening here? Because IATEFL is incredible in that way. You see people walking around with curiously interesting objects. So tell us more about it.
I don't go anywhere without an inflatable globe. It's as simple as that. I mean, I suppose it's kind of my totem. I don't know. I want to just give this globe to Hanin a moment to hold. And there's a reason why, because I'm going to just tell a short tale. And it's a tale that I often tell, and I make no apology for telling it again. So there was a teacher. This is an old Sufi story. And this teacher was wise. So wise, this teacher could answer any question. She had so much knowledge, as Finn McCool had after sucking that thumb. She could answer any question, and the students respected that teacher, but then they kind of got tired and they wanted to test the teacher and ask her a question that she couldn't answer. And one of the students had an idea. That student caught a small bird and came to the teacher with the bird held in her hands, so the teacher couldn't see what the student was holding. And the student said to the teacher, "Teacher, what I'm holding in my hands, is it alive or is it dead?" Now, somehow that wise teacher knew that the student was holding a bird in her hands. And the teacher knew that if she said that what that student was holding was alive, that she would surely crush the bird and show its dead body. And that if she said it was dead, the student would open her hands and the bird would fly away alive and free. And the teacher thought and looked and said to the student, "The answer, life or death, is in your hands." And that's the story. And I think that as teachers, we carry so much responsibility for the generations that we pass our knowledge on to, but we pass that knowledge and the world on to our students, because the responsibility for our future at this critical moment — isn't every moment a critical moment — is in your hands.
That is true. That is true. Well, thank you all very much for joining us today.
So I hope you enjoyed listening to the podcast today. That was us talking at IATAFL last week. Just before you go, just want to let it sit with you all again. If you heard it there, Hanine's comment: it is giving the kids wings to fly when they can't fly themselves. It gives them wings to fly with their hearts and souls, and gives them a voice. I think that's the perfect moment to leave it there. Thank you and goodbye.